This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The State Department saying the U.S. has been in contact with the Syrian group that ousted President Bashar al-Assad, which is still labeled by the U.S. as a terrorist group. This as in Syria, a cousin of former President Assad looks to have been caught in Damascus. Online videos show him being repeatedly punched and kicked by the rebels who found him. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says his department is sending additional resources to assist the state of New Jersey in addressing that rash of drone sightings there. And he says,
we know of no foreign involvement with respect to the sightings in the Northeast, and we are vigilant in investigating this matter, the Department of Homeland Security, with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the lead.
And a rare tornado touching down in Northern California caused damage north of Santa Cruz. Cars were flipped over, homes were damaged, so were businesses, and several people were injured. This is ABC News. The Federal Reserve is widely expected to cut interest rates this week for the third time this year, but the latest inflation numbers could complicate things. ABC's Jay O'Brien has more.
Last month's consumer price index showing prices rose 2.7% compared to the same time last year. That's down significantly from its peak, but still above the 2% inflation rate the Fed has been aiming for. Food and energy prices, typically the most volatile, rising in November in that report. And to fight inflation, the Fed usually raises interest rates or holds them steady. That's why if there is that expected rate cut this week, some economists are projecting that it might be a while until the next one, and the Fed might move cautiously into the new year.
Bad weather is being blamed by Russia after two of its cargo ships ran aground in the Black Sea between Russia and Crimea. At least one death has been reported in the incident. I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
It's the center of the Kringle-making world. Racine County wears the crown, and bakers like those at O&H create more than 10,000 of the delicate oval-shaped pastry every single day.
Just a great pastry. One that's hard to make, though. Hard to replicate.
Peter Olison is a third-generation owner. O&H is celebrating its 75th year. But do you know if Wisconsin considers the Kringle our official pastry? The answer coming up.
The 500-square-foot corner bakery to offering our products by mail.
Baker Mike Massanella says their Kringle is shipped near and far. The tradition began when the Danes came to Racine in the late 1800s. And it is that past and present which created our official state pastry, the Kringle, in 2013. And it's a you can't have just one slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Even though it's illegal under state law, more Wisconsinites are getting abortion care through telemedicine. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
An 1800s Wisconsin law caused a temporary statewide ban on abortion services after Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022. But Jenny Higgins with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Collaborative for Reproductive Equity says even after the ban was lifted in 2023, demand for abortion pills in Wisconsin remained high.
Suggesting that even when brick and mortar facilities are offering abortion care in our state, telehealth abortion still is a really important service that many people in our state are taking advantage of through these Shield laws.
There have been about 130 orders for abortion pills per month made through Shield Law providers since July of 2023, according to WeCount data. There have also been reports of stockpiling nationwide since the election. With only four abortion clinics statewide, 96% of Wisconsin counties don't have an abortion provider, and about 70% of Wisconsinites of reproductive age live in a county without an abortion clinic. Higgins says while Shield Law clinicians provide critical and affordable care to Wisconsinites who grapple with numerous restrictions to abortion, attempts to criminalize both providers and patients are expected, with Black and brown patients at the highest risk.
We know historically that Black and brown women are the most likely to be criminalized during pregnancy, whether that pregnancy is ending in abortion or birth. And so I think we need to pay great attention to the ways in which some of the pregnant people with the least social power could be putting themselves at risk.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Areas of fog will give way to cloudy skies today and a light south breeze at highs in the upper 30s. Tonight, the clouds stay put and our temperatures don't budge a whole lot, mid-30s by early Monday morning. Clouds and breezy winds Monday, highs near 40. It's 39 at our studios.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk about news deserts and what that means to our politics. We'll wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome into this week's Spotlight. Michelle Kramer joins Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show. She is one of the parents who filed a discrimination complaint with the school district of Menominee Falls for removing the only book representing LGBTQIA families they had.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we are all about real news and great conversation. Stay up to date in your community every weekday with the Civic Media's Local News Roundup podcast. You can listen on the Civic Media website or subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite pods. Go check that out. I get them every day and take a listen. My next guest, her name is Michelle Kramer. She's a parent in the Menominee Falls School District who recently filed a discrimination complaint related to the removal of a book called Love Makes a Family, which represents an LGBTQ plus family, obviously saying that love makes a family and embracing the idea that there are different family structures. Apparently, another parent in the school district had asked for the book to be removed under a particular procedure in the school district. The book was removed. And then Michelle and at least one other parent filed a complaint basically saying, hey, by removing this book, you're harming diversity. You're adding to the hostile environment in the school district related to LGBTQ plus families and students. Michelle, welcome to the show. I'm joined by my co-host, Tom Paulswitz. Really appreciate you making time. The crux was that the school district had refused to schedule a school board meeting to hear your complaints. Where does that stand? Have you had a hearing yet before the school board?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. We filed this back in August, and it's been quite the adventure through the school district process. So we have met with the HR director, the superintendent, and then we were supposed to have met with the school board, as you mentioned, but we were denied that opportunity. They said, go right to DPI. We look forward to hearing what they say. So recently, we just kind of joined their meeting and shared our thoughts during public comment.
And that was just this week, was it not?
Yes, it was on Monday.
Monday, the 9th. Yes, it's hard to keep track of the dates these days. So were you allowed to speak? Did they take public comment during the school board meeting this past Monday?
So they did take public comment, and I believe 13 of us, like-minded parents and community members, were able to speak and share our thoughts, and that was a really cool moment.
I'm glad that you at least had that opportunity. Why is it that the school board is unwilling to follow their own procedure, which is procedure 411, which allows families to present their concerns at an appropriate meeting? Do you feel like that procedure has now been satisfied by the meeting on Monday?
No, I don't. It should have been much more of a dialogue and conversation and exploratory together. Their response to us stated that they were concerned about us being concerned about their kind of bias with making a decision at that role of the complaint, because they were the ones who made the decision in the first place. So they said, go right to DPI. But I, of course, could hypothesize other reasons as well.
Wow. Tom, I'm going to turn it over to you in a minute if you've got questions for Michelle, but I just wanted to get that last part straight. So the administrative oversight body of a school district, the school board, that has an explicit policy which allows parents to request that the administrative oversight board revisit one of its decisions, said that they were concerned about your concerns, and so they won't follow their own policy to review a prior decision. I mean, am I getting that mostly right?
Yeah, concern that we would see their decision at that level of school board meeting as biased because they would be the ones ruling on their own removal of a book.
Interesting. Then why have a policy that permits parents to ask the school board to review a prior decision? It makes no sense. By the way, I mean, I won't hide the baseball or hide the punchline here at all or play inside baseball. Removing a book simply because it includes an LGBTQ plus family and says that love makes a family is a biased decision by the Menominee Falls School Board. I'm going to bring my co-host Tom in here. Do you have a question for Michelle, Tom?
Yeah, a question, but I'll make an observation first. Reading the article about when you first brought the complaint, I think the school board had talked about this being an alternative lifestyle book.
Yes.
And should it be replaced by something more of a religious variety type book? And I just wanted to see, Michelle, if you had a comment on that component of what they were talking about.
Yeah. During the public comment, someone brought this up, that they had made different kinds of suggestions for books to replace, such as ones about animals and other things. I think the zoo specifically, maybe. But again, you would see all different types of families at the zoo. So I'm not sure that that would serve their purpose. But yes, there were other suggestions made.
Yeah. And then they also fell back on one of their policies, which seems to me they didn't give you a very good answer on exactly what part of the policy they were relying on. And it seems like they just want to throw this back up to the DPI and get some more guidance. But because I know that this has happened in the Elmbrook School District also, where it took one parent to question a book and it was taken out of circulation. There seems to be, a difference of opinion of how that process should work. Have you had a chance to discuss that with either the administration or the school board about a more equitable policy when it comes to this?
Yeah, I mean, so fortunately or unfortunately, the facts of this case, I think, are a little bit different than what has happened in other districts, in that the policy was actually changed after the removal of the book. And it was put online for a very short time after the vote was made. And then once we filed with DPI, it could no longer be found. So there are many things like that have occurred that we have outlined in our complaint, where things just aren't quite, very transparent or weren't done in the proper order. And that we can, say that this wasn't the right decision for these reasons of the moves that you've made.
And then what do you think is going to happen next?
I can say what I hope will happen next.
It's a good starting point. Yes.
Is that DPI will hopefully, Dr. Underley has been a ally of the LGBTQ plus community and has been entrusted with this power of being state superintendent. And so we hope that she will see the facts of this case alongside, state and federal laws, statutes regarding protected classes and educational guidelines from DPI about content that should be available in the classroom and, assist and rule in our favor. But we'll have to wait for that.
And do you have a date on when do you think that ruling will be happening?
They said several months is what they said.
Okay. Wow. Michelle, question for you. Are you or any of the other parents planning on running for school board?
I don't think anything has been solidified yet, but it will be exciting to see who does run when the date gets closer for announcing that.
It's been alarming to me that it seems that the movement, whether we're talking about, addressing the accurate record of America's history regarding race, or discussing the reality that gay people in the LGBTQ community exists, that the approach has been to literally whitewash and try to erase both our history and the reality of our present, to act as if gay people don't exist today, or the LGBTQ plus community doesn't exist, to act like families that are LGBTQ plus don't exist, to act like our nation's incredibly complicated history with race and its echoes and impacts on today doesn't exist. As a parent, not only from the perspective of a hostile environment, but just for the point of like access to a complete educational experience, what to you has been most alarming and thus catalyzing you to get involved in this way and to speak up and out?
Yeah, so there are a couple things you said right there. One, we pointed to all of that in our complaint that, you know, our nation has come so far in making sure that everyone is included, and this is a huge setback. And we wouldn't want to do that for anyone else either. And so that was one point. One is we've presented evidence that it's really important that kids see themselves in their education in order to best participate and engage, which therefore benefits the district in increased, you know, engagement, learning, test scores, of course, is what we look at, and all of that. So we really want all students to be able to engage and for the future too. I have one in first grade now, and I have an 18-month-old that will be in the district in the future, and we want to raise them for the world that they're going to enter to be ready to be kind, participating, you know, empathetic members of the workforce and the communities that they live in.
One last question for you, Michelle. Have you or any of the other parents in the district considered leaving the Menominee Falls School District because of these sorts of policies and these kinds of trends?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, that has come up for some of the families, and it's been difficult to listen to because, you know, the families I've been in touch with are really awesome contributors to the community. They're teaching their kids kindness, to be good friends, but also participating within the PTO and things like that, and school sports. So it's hard to hear that this decision is affecting, you know, whether people want to be included in the district or not.
Mm. What difficult choices for parents.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom. Very difficult. Michelle, did you feel like that you and the other 12 parents that got up to speak about this issue, do you think it swayed the school board in any sense?
No, I also don't think that was our goal either. I don't think we had any hopes that they would, but I think that it was to get awareness out. You know, I think that 99% of the people I've talked to are supportive of this and are like-minded. And so just making sure that people in our district, but others, know about our efforts, and so that we can work together to keep this moving forward.
Excellent. Folks, that's Michelle Kramer. She's one of the parents who filed a discrimination complaint with the school district of Menominee Falls back in August. It took them until just this week to have the school board actually hear their complaint. My best of luck to you, Michelle. I speak for Tom as well on this with your complaint. I hope DPI gets back to you. And happy holidays to you and every parent and family in the Menominee Falls School District. Folks, when we come back, we're going to be joined by a very special guest. Have you ever tried to get a degree while working and parenting? My goodness, my guest just did that and is graduating this Saturday. You know him well, and so do I. You're not going to want to miss this. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE. The Todd Alba Show.
Pat Kreitlow, all your time in the media, television, radio, what have you, what was one or two of the oddest things that people were complaining about?
As a TV anchor, your hair.
You have some of the finest hair around. How could anybody criticize your hair?
Oh, well, because a consultant forced me to change it.
Were there focus groups?
I'm not aware of any focus groups other than the audience, which universally hated it. It was a bowl haircut.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Spotlight, we'll hear from the Dom Salvia Show. Dom checked in with our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at UW-Green Bay. He asks him, what do Democrats need to do in order to start winning again?
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Sticking around for another segment. Harvey, thank you for doing so. Hey, Dems, you want to win? How do you do it? Well, invite labor back. Not just go out and get the labor, but like literally, what, bring them back to the table. Give them some power within the party itself. As mentioned, what, late 60s, early 70s, kind of pushed out labor's role to, what, bring in more diversity, quote unquote. But as you mentioned, to me, Harvey, there's more diversity in labor than there was back then.
Oh, labor is the most diverse force in America, decidedly the most diverse organized force in this country. You couldn't get more diverse than the labor movement right now.
All right, so what else we got? We'll bring labor back in. So Ben Wickler, okay. Our guy from here in Wisconsin, that's who I want to see at the DNC. Ben, we got his ear. We'll convince him of that. What other suggestions do we have?
Okay, the second thing is that they've got to start calling out. This goes back to the other thing that came up in our discussion previous segment. They've got to call out the corporate elite and the billionaires. Look, those are the folks who launched their class war against the democratic achievements of the 1930s to the 1960s. And everybody knows it, okay? At least those of us old enough to remember. This has been a long haul that these folks have been pursuing and ultimately destroying the democratic achievements of a president and a generation from the 30s through the 1960s. So that I think that's imperative. And by the way, a good lesson for that would be that of FDR. You know, FDR, what, in 1936, when he accepted the renomination to run again, that is, for president of the United States for a second term, he said, the economic royalists, he meant the corporate bosses, complain we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. But what they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
Yes.
Now that's a gutsy guy. And then later that later that fall in Madison Square Garden, he pointed out how literally capital had organized a very elite movement to try to end his presidency. And he said to the audience and radio audience, I welcome their hatred. We got to have somebody with that kind of guts. Yeah. Not the Democrats who tell us I want to fight for you, and then tell the corporate bosses nothing will fundamentally change. Okay, that has to fundamentally
change. Yeah, those two statements, those cannot exist at the same time. What are you fighting for? I've seen some recent reporting, Harvey, on how it's almost like the billionaire class, they don't even have their proxies anymore. They're just like, hell, then I'm just going to be the face. Elon Musk, right? All these cats, Vivek Ramaswamy, Donald Trump. I remember back when the first time I heard about Americans for Prosperity and the Koch brothers and some of these different groups, I'm like, wait, what? Who's that? Huh? Like these folks if you were in, maybe you knew, but it wasn't so blatant and out there. Now it's just like, hell, we don't even need to have proxies. We'll just go do that role ourselves. I'm a billionaire. Because I'm a billionaire, I'm smarter than everybody else. I'll figure it out. And I'm very concerned about that. Harvey, do you think it's better or worse that they're the ones, in fact, now trying to step into these roles instead of having proxies?
I think it's pernicious. I think it's absolutely, it's unbelievable. Who are they? Who elected them?
Yeah.
Okay. And now we've got Donald Trump and Musk, you know, with this what is it called? D-O-G-E, Department
Doge.
Of
Doge.
Doge. Doge. There is no, you cannot create a department as president. It's not the way it works. And American people are being bamboozled on this stuff. Bamboozled.
I'm concerned about the American people, and specifically our attention to history and our education or lack thereof, but maybe we'll get there. Okay, what else we got? We got two options.
Well, the third thing is, okay, not only should they be hostile to the corporate bosses, calling them out, they should also be engaging the imagination and the needs and wants of the American people. So as you've heard me say for quite some time, the Democrats need to be speaking of developing, maybe someday enacting, but definitely in the meantime, pursuing an economic bill of rights. And first and foremost, now to go back to the thing we started with, healthcare. Everyone knows that healthcare is the most fundamental question in the lives of working people and their families, okay? We need an American rendition of socialized or national health care, okay? That is essential. And I would go on another time. I don't want to take all the listing the other nine elements of an economic bill of rights, because I do think there's another key ingredient, which we definitely should consider. And that is, Democrats need to choose candidates who will not only promise to fight for us, they will encourage the fight in us to back them and to pursue the kinds of bills and laws that will address the desperate needs of the vast majority of Americans. So, you know, so there it is. You've got invite labor back in a significant way. Two, call out the corporate elite. Three, think about economic rights. And four, in choosing candidates, choose candidates who will encourage a fight in people, not candidates who simply promise to fight for you.
Harvey, it sounds like we need an energetic leader type. Is there anybody out there right now off the top of your head that you think mildly fits that role?
No. I mean, Bernie Sanders is old.
Yeah.
Let's face it. He's old. But his voice is not. It's still a young voice. As much as possible, I think progressives and others should be rallying around his voice. And let's see what emerges. I mean, there are decidedly progressive figures. Okay. There's this guy out of Texas, Kassar, who's a really interesting character.
Now, elected the Progressive Caucus? Was that
right? He just took the leadership of the Progressive Caucus. Yeah. He seems very interesting and very promising. Ro Khanna has a definite interest in these kinds of things. There are others. AOC is much too young to be considered, I think, for a national presidential kind of campaign.
But she's certainly on that path, and she inspires in all sorts of folks, not just the progressives, but certainly on the megas as well. Bring the labor back into the party around the decision-making, not just to go out and do the work. Call out the corporate elite always. An economic bill of rights. Yes, let's address the health care issues. We can do that, especially if we call it the corporate elite who don't want to change that. And of course, find some encouraging and inspiring leaders to encourage the fight. We'll do the fight, encourage the fight within ourselves. Harvey Kay, you're one of them. My favorite Delano Democrat professor emeritus of democracy over at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I'm going to keep on saying it till it's a thing. Thank you for your time once again, my friend.
As ever, thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Folks, stick around. We'll be right back. 855-752-4842.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The State Department saying the U.S. has been in contact with the Syrian group that ousted President Bashar al-Assad, which is still labeled by the U.S. as a terrorist group. This as in Syria, a cousin of former President Assad looks to have been caught in Damascus. Online videos show him being repeatedly punched and kicked by the rebels who found him. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says his department is sending additional resources to assist the state of New Jersey in addressing that rash of drone sightings there. And he says,
we know of no foreign involvement with respect to the sightings in the Northeast, and we are vigilant in investigating this matter, the Department of Homeland Security, with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the lead.
And a rare tornado touching down in Northern California caused damage north of Santa Cruz. Cars were flipped over, homes were damaged, so were businesses, and several people were injured. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks advanced to the finals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. At the NBA Cup in Las Vegas, the Bucks with a 110-102 win over Atlanta. So how did Milwaukee's Andre Jackson Jr. and the Bucks do to slow down the Hawks' Trae Young, who had 35 points? Doc Rivers.
You know, our game plan was to try to make him play against one-on-one. Trae deserves a lot of credit. Trae can have those games where it can hurt you. When he does that, he's not helping anybody else. And so that's what we're trying to do as much as we can. I thought we did a pretty good job of it.
The Bucks face the Thunder Tuesday night at 7:30. In the championship game. College hoops, Wisconsin over Butler, 83-74. Number 6 ranked Marquette upset, losing on the road to Dayton, 71-63. NFL, Packers and the Seahawks tonight on Sunday Night Football. I asked Jaden Reed if quarterback Jordan Love is doing a better job of finding the open receiver.
Yeah, no doubt. J Love does a great job of identifying and, you know, finding the open man, you know, when we have to adjust the route. Yeah, no doubt.
That's Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Dense fog advisory tonight, a low around 35. Drizzle and fog for Monday, highs around 40. Monday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 27. Tuesday, partly sunny, highs near 37. Lots of sun for Wednesday and a high near 30. Another chance of snow by Thursday.
It's 39 at our studios.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turned public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Aaron Sommers, so you watched a film called Hot Frosty.
The main character puts a scarf that she does not know is enchanted around this snowman, and he comes to life, and he starts streaking through the town.
Is there any sex in this movie, Aaron?
There is not.
I think they're missing a perfect thing to go with a fetish snowman thing here.
Gotta bet that audience is huge. What's your kink? Snowman.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwalbe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome talent manager and actress Heather Art and Appleton-based comedian Rob Brackenridge, who drops by the studio for some laughs. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to this week's Civic Media Spotlight. Todd Alba is up next, and this week he spoke with Chad Holmes from The Chad Holmes Show on 98.9 WXCO. They cover some local news up in Wausau, primarily about the Wausau School District, which has been financially struggling for the past few years due to declining enrollment. In an effort to balance the books, the district is considering closing several schools. Chad explains what it means for the people of Wausau.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show of the Civic Media Radio Network. 34 now past the hour of 1 o'clock on Wednesday, December 11th. Zommer's on the board. Some breaking news at this hour, important to get to here before we get to Mr. Holmes. According to CNN and multiple sources, FBI Director Christopher Wray will resign at the end of the Biden administration, according to a statement from the FBI moments ago. President-elect Donald Trump has announced that he will nominate Kashmir Patel for the role. And, of course, it was Trump who nominated Chris Wray in that position, but already indicated that he does not want to continue that. Trump has based his actions to replace Wray in part on Chris Wray approving the raid on Mar-a-Lago to take possession of those sensitive and top secret documents that Trump had held in his bathroom off the ballroom at Mar-a-Lago. Again, breaking news, FBI Director Chris Wray will resign at the end of the Biden administration, according to the FBI. Donald Trump has nominated Kash Patel for the role. Civic Media and our national affiliates will continue to be on this as well, so stay tuned for updates there. We are also right in the middle of our grown-up gift list text to win contest. Somebody this hour is going to win an overnight stay at the beautiful resort in Wisconsin.
Chula Vista. Chula Vista.
I'm sorry. I'm doing three things at once, you understand? I'm no Chad Holmes, all right? It's the Chula Vista Resort, of which Chad has been to, by the way. Let's bring him on right now. He is the host of the wonderful Chad Holmes Show from 8 until 10 on WXCO in Wausau. If you don't live there, have no fear. Download this, the aforesaid Civic Media app. You can listen to him via the app for free on WXCO. He is one of the two hardest working people in Civic Media, along with Phil Nee. He hosts his own show. He gets up in the morning, and then at night, just for fun, he calls three or four high school events. Chad, how are you?
I was doing better until you gave me that breaking news. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I know, right? It comes fast and furious sometimes.
Kash Patel is on his way.
He's on his way. Well, look, we appreciate you joining us, but you were there, I think, for the holiday party up there at beautiful Chula Vista. It's a great place.
Yeah, and actually, I had a few of the Chula Vista certificates given to me to give away on my show, and gave away a few of those. And everybody that's gone has reported back to us how wonderful it was in terms of the experience there. So it really is a cool prize, and I think that the folks that win them will truly enjoy it, especially this time of year.
Absolutely. You could be on your way to beautiful Chula Vista. All you have to do is text in the word ELF, E as in Edward, L, F as in Frank, ELF. Text ELF right now to the Civic Media app. Also, the other question we are doing, Chad, are what's worse, a hard bed or a soft bed? What's worse?
I think a soft bed.
Yeah.
I prefer a firm bed.
Yeah.
I think that there's more trouble that could be had with a soft bed than a hard bed. And holy cow.
Can you hear me?
I hear you now.
I'm not sure.
I might go here for a moment.
The lawyers have taken me off the air. The civic media attorneys have said, no way, Todd's messing up the contest. And for those watching on the stream, my camera has gone down.
It was so impressive. It just went away, and I thought, uh-oh. I'm for the afternoon edition.
All right, it's the Chad Holmes Show afternoon edition from now on.
I've gone statewide.
God love you. Anytime. Well, I'm not sure. I'm glad people can see you. At least they can hear me. Zommer is, of course, doing yeoman's work. He's on top of this.
Populated voice now.
Right. I'm just. I don't know. I'm a spirit walking the earth with no body. All right. Well, let's get to more serious things, Chad. On your program, again, 8 until 10, and what I love about this, and one of the many things I love about Civic Media, is that
I believe that the most important work is being done in places like WXTO in Wausau, WRCO in Richland Center, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, where you all are on top of this. You're part of the community, and you bring this these important information facts to the local community. And one of the things that Tony Zimmerman sent out today was from the Wausonian, and this story on the Wausau School District on Monday night heard the details of a plan to close 4 elementary schools. The plan would decommission 3 schools and repurpose a 4th, and the board could act on that plan, they say, as soon as this month. Can you give us some of the details of this, Chad? Because I think it's important not just for people in the WXCO listing area, but again, as we have so many districts now who are underfunded by state funds, more and more districts are having to go to local referenda. Explain what's happening in Wausau, please.
Yeah, it's actually part of a larger process that's gone on for the last couple of years. It started off with some of the discussions about merging the 2 high schools. We have Wausau West and Wausau East high schools, mm-hmm. and in terms of trying to talk about some lower enrollment numbers, obviously some financial numbers that don't add up, the thought was going to merge the 2 high schools and also lead to some changes involved with the middle school and the junior high schools here in Wausau. And they went through a process that went very quickly. And I think the process was a main factor that was led to some of the problems. And ultimately, initially, the school board voted to merge East and West. And by next fall, we would have been back to a Wausau High School, which was the case until about 1971. Mm-hmm. But then there was a lot of backlash, and it really did get pushed from the community at large. The board came back. They voted again after a month or two and said, no, we're not going to do that. We've gone mm-hmm. back to the Wausau East, Wausau West high schools. The junior high schools and the middle schools will remain the same as well. At this point, then they started to look at the elementary schools. And there is some major differences this process. And I remember this story basically was coming to heating up, as I started the show and we started Civic Media. And one of the things I talked about often was the process. So you have to have a good process to make it work. The process has been much better this time around. They had an elementary task force that's met, I believe, 9 times over the last number of months, and had 45 members. It was split 15 people that are parents of school-age children, 15 residents of Wausau that do not have school-age children, and 15 staff members, teachers and staff members, part of this group. And they have been working on this. And I think one thing to also indicate is the top criterion. There was a list of 5 different criterion. Mm. The top criterion, fiscal responsibility. And right. Sometimes I think that obviously the fiscal aspect is vitally important, but at the same time, I do think that sometimes if it's just about fiscal responsibility, that's not a great thing either. But nevertheless, this group has come together and they released this week their ideas. Mm. And to underline, it's not a case where this is a done deal at this point, but it does feel like there is a momentum about it. And you mentioned right. the fact that 4 of the elementary schools would be closing up. One thing I would note as well, though, that I mentioned this on the show yesterday, actually. I drive past one of the schools every day, basically, mm-hmm. Grant Elementary. And I've often thought it's a very cool-looking school, but it's also a very old school. Sure. And one of the ideas is that some of these schools, frankly, are just really past their prime, and there would have to be some significant either renovations or new building, so it's completely understandable, the fiscal aspect. But the idea is that there would be roughly 25-30% of the school population, elementary school students in the Wausau School District would have to change attendance areas with this.
Right.
And there's a lot to get into.
I'm
on a monologue here. But,
no, I appreciate it.
There is, I think there's a lot of good ideas here. I do mm-hmm. think that I like the way the process has gone. I don't have all the information yet. I've reached out to the school board president, Jim Boucher, who's been on my program a number of times. And he said, well, wait till the end of the week. This is all want to get some response from members of the board and members of the school administration, and then come and talk about it and talk about the next steps. But I do think there's a lot of positivity here, because ultimately, from what I have been able to gather, that the status quo is not an option. There's an interesting stat I saw in one of the stories. There's 1,100 empty desks right now within the Wausau School District in the elementary school area. And that number is going to grow. So the idea that some sort of consolidation is important, I think, is one that can be proven to the folks in Wausau. And of course, that's where it comes down to. There's where the problem was with the high school consolidation plan, where I don't think they got the people involved early enough and in a way that felt like they were part of the process.
Right.
But I do see some of the numbers, and I do like the fact of the makeup of this task force that gave these recommendations. So I think there's a lot of positives, though I'm not willing at this point to say, hey, I'm all for it or I'm against it at this point. But I do think there's a lot of positives in the way that this has been done compared to maybe what happened a couple of years ago.
I know, Chad, you just laid out very well the importance of civic media and our mission in each of these individual stations and as a network and being a statewide network. Because a story like this, taken, you know, quickly with journalists under tight deadlines statewide, could say, oh, look, you know, Wausau could close four schools. And a lot of hyperbole gets thrown out there. You just laid out where, look, part of it might be the fact that Republicans haven't fully funded 2/3 of state funding for local school districts, but also there are changing demographics. And to your point also that, you know, maybe some of these buildings, maybe is a greater tax burden to repair some of these buildings than it is to simply shut them down. Could that be a burden on local families? Yeah, it could. But these are more nuanced, detailed, factual things that takes a reporter, a journalist like yourself, being there and understanding this in the community. And I appreciate you taking time to lay this out. Tony off the YouTube channel has a question for us there. And it says, in a few years, the population of Wausau grows.
If in a few years.
Oh, if in a few years the population of Wausau grows, will they be in a really tough situation? Is the lower enrollment now a temporary situation? Again, Chad, you're a native up there. What are the trends you're seeing?
Well, as part of this study, as it shows that there are 1,100 empty desks spread throughout the 13 Wausau elementary schools right now, their projections actually have that number growing to about 1,300 by the year 2027. So that has actually been part of the discussions, that the trends are that it's not going to be a case where some of those desks are going to be filled in the next few years. Actually, some of those desks are going to be further emptied in the next couple of years. So I do think that the future trends are something that have definitely been looked at by this task force.
Yeah. Gonna have you come back much sooner. It's been way too long to continue to talk about this. You have about 1.5 minutes left. Give us a quick what's hot in the high school sports world in central Wisconsin.
Something last night. We had a wonderful experience last night. I was over at the Marathon Park Ice Arena. Stevens Point is the number one ranked hockey team in the state right now. They came and played Wausau West, and these have been the two best teams in the Wisconsin Valley Conference for many years. It's early in the season. It's a Tuesday night. It's December, and that place was packed to the gills. Wow. I mean, it was like every seat was filled. They were standing room around the boards. It was such an energy. And it comes down to, and I was talking about this earlier this morning, we love the Pack. We love the Badgers. We love the professional college teams in our state. But boy, when you have an opportunity to be with folks from our communities, people from Stevens Point came down to Interstate 39 to be there, to see everybody for this kind of matchup, to have that energy, to have just, and then a wonderful game, a 4-3 game that went right down to the wire. I just think that sometimes we get focused on the bigness aspect of it as opposed to the micro here where you have a high school match. But I think same thing with what we do. We focus on our communities, and I thought it was a great night for the community.
Amen. I appreciate it. Well said. It's part of what makes Wisconsin great. It's what brings us together, our public schools, our communities. Chad Holmes, you can listen to him every morning from 8 until 10 on WXCO and on the Civic Media app, and you can catch him around the state doing a great job in high school sports. Thank you, my friend. We appreciate you.
Thank you too, Todd.
Always a pleasure. Come on back. We'll wrap up the show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To
To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE. The holidays are here, and it's nearly time to pick a present from our grown-up gift list with our Civic Media statewide text-to-win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of our grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on our grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win in our statewide contest.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up hour one of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from Nightlight with Peach Wabba. Pete welcomed on Wisconsin author Brett Kissinger to talk about his new book, The Surviving Remnant, the story behind it, and his style as a writer. To hear any and all of these shows, download the Civic Media app available on the Google Play and Apple App Store.
We're going to pivot here. So we covered wrestling. We covered pro wrestling. We covered jazz musicians from Sweden. And now we are going to turn to kind of a lost art. Book writing and reading, at least reading for me. Our old friend Brett Kissinger joins me now. He is a Wisconsin author based in Algoma who is quite prolific. And he joins us now here in the studio on Nightlight. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's great to have you back here. So I say that, Brett, and I'm kind of saddened. I always say, and I've said this on the show, I plan to be a reader again. I was an English major. I used to read a lot, and now my brain is just gone from iPhones and TV and all that kind of stuff. Somehow I manage to, when I'm writing a screenplay, I stick with it and I can focus. But it's I have issues reading when I try to read books, you know, that I just can't. I can't stay focused. What do you make of that as a writer? And does that depress you that I just said that?
A little bit. It's understanding. I think it's the job of the writer to make sure that you can't put the book down.
Okay.
Some people like the audiobook. Some people like a Kindle. Some people like the actual physical book.
Okay.
I think it's also the time of day you're reading probably. You know, if you're trying to read late at night, it's a good way to fall asleep.
That is absolutely true. Yeah. Yeah. I end up reading like the same sentence. 9 times. But I do that with TV, too. I'll watch a scene. I'll fall asleep. I'll wake up. I'll rewind it. And I'll go through that whole dance for 10 minutes, you know, before I finally pack it in. I assume that you're a reader as well. I mean, most writers seem to get a lot of inspiration from other writers to find techniques or even a storyline maybe that you can not steal but take something from and kind of make it your own. How many books a year do you say you read?
Probably 50 to 60.
Wow. Yeah. Here's why I asked that, because writing is time consuming. You know, it's like I always like, I don't know. It seems like acting is easier. Directing is easier. Writing is what is so tedious. And it's like a math equation. When you have a script or a book, everything has to make sense. And it's so time consuming. Reading is time consuming. pardon me. So to the fact that you're a prolific reader and writer, I don't know when you sleep, but that's impressive.
Yeah. I definitely do read a lot, and I don't read in my genre of historical fiction.
Okay.
Only because I don't want to emulate anybody I read.
That makes sense.
So yeah. I do like to read outside my genre. I read a lot of biographies.
Okay.
I like drawing inspiration from real life, because fact is generally more fascinating than fiction most often.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's funny that you say that, because I think you said that last time you were on, that you like biographies, and that's where you get ideas from characters.
Yep.
And that's great. Leon Uris is one of my favorite writers back when I used to read. Where do you rank him in the historical fiction category?
I actually haven't read him.
Oh, really? Okay.
So
you'll have to check out Trinity.
Okay.
And then let's have a discussion about that book, because there are times in that book where I just literally almost lost it in tears in a reading a book. Like, he's that good of a writer at times. Do you have, we have to do a break soon. Then I want to go full steam into your book. How do you write? Do you write every day at the same time, or do you write when the mood catches you? What's your process?
I definitely try to be disciplined, so I write at the same time every day,
okay.
Usually at night from probably 5 o'clock to 8. That's kind of my window during the week.
And then anything interesting
during the weekend is kind of a bonus, but I definitely try to stick to like a regiment where I'm, because I feel like if you take the easy way out, or if you, you know, fall privy to like a mistake, or like, I'm going to watch Netflix tonight, like that just becomes a habit. So
right.
My habit's going to be, I'm just going to work. So
procrastinating is, it's kind of like the snowball effect sometimes, right?
Right?
It just gets easier to do the more you do it. And I find that, I don't know if you find this, but when you sit down to write, even when you're not in the mood, you tend to come up with something and you end up being happy you sat down to write. Is that true with you?
Yeah, definitely. If you stare at that blank cursor, it just becomes like this ominous, undefeatable thing. So I just keep writing, and even if it's crap, there's going to be some little specks of diamond in there that you can
make that cursor your muse, buddy.
Yeah.
That's what you do. All right, Brett Kissinger is here. When we come back, we're going to talk about his book, The Surviving Remnant. He even has a trailer for it. I don't even know how you did that, but I'll ask you about that too. We've got Civic Media award-winning news headed your way right now, and we'll have more with Northeast Wisconsin writer Brett Kissinger on Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more, you're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we continue our live coverage from the Seattle area, focusing on the Naval Air Station in Bremerton. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. The
Todd Alba Show.
We're going to meet each other out in beautiful Seattle. My youngest godson lives out there. He works for the Navy at the Bremerton Naval Shipyard.
This is like your trip to L.A. There's always a connection over here.
Well, sure, because there's no hotel costs. I crash on people's couches, right?
You are as innovative as you are cheap. That's a beautiful thing. You are correct, thrifty, my friend. Are you sure Todd's a former Republican? Yes. Yes, he is.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Two men accused of hazardous drone operation arrested in the Boston area this weekend. Meanwhile, new information about other reported drones on the East Coast that may involve manned aircraft.
In New Jersey, Senator Andy Kim going out on drone patrol with police Saturday night, tweeting they were almost certainly planes. New York Governor Kathy Hochul saying this has gone too far, and New Jersey officials demanding permission from the federal government to collect at least one of the drones and get to the bottom of the issue.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. has had direct contact with HTS, that's the rebel group which ousted former Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and word that a cousin of Assad, a former general, has been captured in Syria by rebels. According to Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, Luigi Mangione, the prime suspect in the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, may waive his right to extradition and could be in a New York City courtroom as early as Tuesday. This is ABC News.